Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, and welcome to In Transit, the series where we center the many journeys of immigrant ethnic women navigating life in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with me, your host, Hafsa. In each episode, I sit down with women who share their journeys of settling in a new land, the challenges they have faced, and the resilience that carried them through. From cultural clashes to quiet triumphs, and from moments of doubt to deep appreciation, these are raw, honest, and hopeful conversations. Whether you're new to the country or simply curious, this is your space to listen, learn, and connect.
Kia ora and welcome to another episode of our lovely podcast with Wahine from various diverse ethnicities. Today I have my latest guest with me, so welcome to the show. Please tell us about yourself.
Thank you so much, Hafsa. Thanks for having me today. My name is Himasha Gunasekara. I'm originally from Sri Lanka. I'm an education designer by profession, living in Rolleston and working at Lincoln University. And I'm here with my family, my husband, and my daughter, Zaylee.
Nice. Thank you very much, Himasha, for sharing that about yourself. And what I want to know about you is, when did you come to New Zealand?
I'm here 5 years ago, if I math this correct, late 2019. So, yeah. I'll say like 5+ years anyway. So the reason I moved from Sri Lanka to here was my PhD studies. So I was teaching in a university in back home, and as a part of my professional development, I had to pursue my higher studies, and I was looking at options in European countries, Australia and New Zealand. And somehow I got to know that New Zealand is offering domestic tuition fees for PhD students, international PhD students. So I thought, okay, I'm going to study in New Zealand. And that's how I ended up here.
Right. And that was very nice to, you know, I think that was one of the reasons even we came to New Zealand was because of the international fee for PhD students. It's a good incentive, isn't it? To consider and come here if you're looking to grow in your career.
Indeed, it is, because I remember I was offered a scholarship from the World Bank since I was an academic in a Global South tertiary institute. But somehow, because of certain work circumstances, I happened to lose my scholarship because there were a couple of other academics reading their PhDs at the same time. So we really couldn't work out on a plan to sort of distribute the workload in the department. So I had to quit the job. So when I quit the job, I lost my scholarship because the funding scheme was prepared in a way that I need to go back and serve for at least 7 more years in the same institute. So once I lost my scholarship, I couldn't afford most of other universities, but New Zealand was the only place that I could offer. So I ended up coming here.
Very nice. Thank you for sharing that. And I think what I really want to know is, what was the first day in New Zealand like?
I think I landed here on a weekday. So airport wasn't that much busy. And it was a spring morning, but it was a gloomy day. And as soon as I come out of the airport, I felt like, because I was expecting like a lot of people, so much chaos outside the airport, because usually the airports are like busy places, like lots of taxis and things. But I couldn't see much, you know, it was pretty silent. And I was quite shocked because I was expecting Christchurch is a bigger city because from Colombo. So comparing to Colombo, I felt like, oh my gosh, this city is like so peaceful. So that was my first impression about New Zealand. And even if it was a spring morning, it was like too cold for me. So I was wearing a couple of layers and like almost shivering. Yeah.
Too cold in spring. Yeah, I think that I've heard that quite a few times now. I think someone's also said that it was too cold even in the peak of summer.
Yes. I used to wear layers even in summer. I remember on my first day to Canterbury University, I was wearing my sweaters, my puff jackets, and my beanies on, and people were looking at me because it was a midday on a spring day, and people were like, why is she wearing a beanie on a hot day like this? But for me, coming from, like a country which is like 30 degrees almost all around the year, that was like a really big shift. And I remember the lady who owns the Airbnb was sort of complaining to me, like, because I got my electric blankets on and then my oil heater like fully on and like it was running overnight. And she said like she could even feel the heat from her room as well. Because I was like basically shivering, like even if it was like around like 25, 26 degrees in the room.
Yeah. So on the first day, who came to pick you up? Did you know someone here, or did you have the university come to pick you up? How did that go?
Initially we didn't have any friends here, but eventually when we were planning our shift to here, we could sort of like make new connections through the people that we already knew in Sri Lanka, like their workmates or some of their family members. So somehow we ended up being introduced to this lovely couple who was living in Christchurch, and at that time they were also student, like came a year ago before we came here. So they were kind enough to like come and pick her up because at that time she was working at the airport too. So she made some Sri Lankan food and like picked me up and then dropped me to my Airbnb. And yeah, she was really nice. And they were also like joining with me for house hunting afterwards. So yeah, I think it's really important to have that kind of, friendship or support from people from your own community or people from outside. I should say, so my Airbnb owner was also like very kind. She was kind enough to like walk with me to the campus on my first day from Ilam to the campus entrance. Yeah, that meant a lot because I mean, of course, I had my Google map, but on my early days, I wasn't very good at reading that too. So, yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's nice that she decided to walk with you to the campus, you know. That's actually pretty nice of her to do that.
And honestly, we still have that relationship. Like when I had my daughter here, like she came with some sweets and some gifts for my daughter. And on and off, she is still texting to me and sort of like checking how we are doing. Yeah, so I think it's a it's a nice gesture from locals that they are taking care of, people like us who are new to New Zealand, and I really appreciate that.
Nice. So very cold day here. So my question now is going reverse because I want to know what was happening in your life before you came to New Zealand. I know you briefly mentioned about being in a university and teaching, but what were you teaching and what was the field you were in, and how you came here to do a PhD, but what area are you did you do your PhD in, and what was your background?
So I gained a bachelor's degree in designing from University of Moratuwa in Sri Lanka. So, as any other parent in from South Asia, my mom wanted me to become a doctor or an engineer. So those are the two privileged, jobs that you will always push your kids to become one day. Somehow I couldn't get enough ESET score to enter to engineering faculty at the University of Morotai, which is the best engineering university in Sri Lanka. But I could get into the design degree. Even I wasn't sure whether I'm going to be a designer, just because University of Morotai was very close to my house. Or else I would have gone to a faraway university to pursue a physical science degree. I thought, okay, I'm going to learn designing and I'm going to go to University of Morotai, but I'm not going to be in the engineering faculty. I mean, I'm not going to study engineering, but I will study designing there. So that's how I ended up being a designer. I think during my first year, I really didn't get what I was learning. My mind was everywhere. Why do I learn about design principles? Why do I learn about shapes, colors, and things? So I think at the end of the first year, I started loving what I was learning. And then I ended up the degree with the second upper because we didn't have any first classes in our batch. So yeah. And then I work in the industry, reputed brand as a product developer for about an year. I learned so much from there. I got to work with overseas clients and suppliers, learn a lot. But that was kind of hectic. And I thought that's not the way I wanted to go. So I decided to jump back into academics. So, meantime, I got the opportunity from the Open University of Sri Lanka to join as a temporary lecturer. I think I was 25 at that time. And I think at that time, being an academic was considered as it's a job that you won't get paid much as in the industry. Yeah. So a lot of people are like, you're still 25. Why do you want to jump back into an academic career? Because what a lot of people would do is like they would be in the corporate industry like in up to their 30s and then maybe jump back to academics or something when they want to have some more family time. I was doing the opposite way. And it was a temporary position too, but I decided, okay, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to become a teacher, which I'm really grateful for myself for taking that decision. So I started becoming an academic in late 2014, and then I was working there. And I think after about a year, I got into a permanent position as a lecturer. And yeah, I'm grateful I got to deal with a lot of people whom I still consider as like role models in my life. Like I learned so much from them. And then eventually, as I grew my academic career, like I finished my master's and then I felt like, okay, it's my time to, go for a PhD and somehow had to quit the job, but ended up coming here.
So yeah, so from your PhD, you got a very big design career and you were in the industry and then you became an academic. So as an academic, were you teaching design?
Yes, that's what I did. So as a design academic, so at that time we had two public institutes who were offering design degrees. So I was working for the Open University of Sri Lanka. And it was a bit of a challenging job because as an open and distance university, we were offering a design degree in, open and distance mode. That was a bit of a challenge. And as a young lecturer, young academic, I was using different strategies to like increase student engagement, like using social media. And yeah, so I think that was one of the key ideas, sort of, that was developed as my PhD research later on, because I saw the real struggle that they were having while they were sort of studying in a distance mode. And also as a Global South Institute, we didn't have much of like funding to, work with better technology as well. So in that way, like social media was a great and affordable way to sort of, make teaching and learning smoothly. Yeah, so I was teaching designing like and working on design projects with university students, and we were also collaborating with Colombo Fashion Week as well. I'm so happy to see that some of my students are like have become top designers in back home. And I'm so glad to see their work on the runway. I think during my career as a lecturer in back home, that's the most, precious thing that I have got so far. That relationship with my students and yeah.
So it's been you moved here and you did your PhD. So was your PhD on design or what was it linked to?
Was on digital education because now that I was a lecturer, like a design lecturer, and I was working in an open and distance university, I always struggled sort of incorporating technology into my day-to-day teaching. And we always had struggles with the technology that we already had in the university. So I was like looking at other alternative, options which we can use to sort of enhance the student engagement and make the teaching and learning process much more smoother than it was. So that was my research concept, which I was sort of like proposed to my supervisors. And so I developed my proposal more related to digital education. So my PhD was around like how we can use social media to sort of like democratize creative education in global South countries. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds so cool to democratize education. That is so cool. That's really
Yeah,
cool.
I mean, so during my research, I got the opportunity to talk to people from the industry, students from public and private institutes, and teachers from both kind of institutes. And it was sort of interesting to know how much was happening in that area. Because, like, I mean, of course, there are certain considerations around data security, intellectual property rights, and things. But as we are living in a post-digital era, the way how post-digitalism feel to a developed country and the way that post-digitalism feels to a developing country is very different. So at the end of the research, I was so surprised to see how people look at the same thing in different perspectives based on their resource availability, based on the opportunities available for them and things like that. So I think I personally enjoyed a lot continuing with my research. Yeah.
I think that that's a very interesting thing that you are mentioning there about the access to digital tools as such as well when you're trying to use digital technologies for education. And that varies across the globe, across countries, isn't it? Not
Yeah.
everyone has access to the internet, especially let's say countries like India, Sri Lanka, and the developing countries in the rural suburbs. Perhaps not everybody has that, so learning is. Oh, that.
Especially now that the mobile technology has gone so far, and it's so affordable and it's a very, the navigation of the technology is like so easy, even if you don't have certain amount of literacy levels or language understanding of like English or any other prominent language. It has become a like a common norm in majority of global South countries to own a smartphone, and the ability to sort of like navigate it and get them tasks. So I think that is something that we can sort of definitely used to sort of for education in order to sort of connect that informal and formal learning spaces.
Yeah, that is so, yeah, that's fascinating. I'll tell you that much. It's very fascinating to know about that area. So shifting now and coming back to New Zealand, I think what I want to know now is that if we come back to New Zealand, what were the first few years like in New Zealand as a student in terms of your experiences around social connections through to just the day-to-day movement of life?
Can I change that question a little bit?
Go
Because
for it.
I wouldn't see any difference between the last 2 years or the last 5 years, because I just finished my PhD. I'm just done with my graduation.
Okay, we
So
didn't
as
need to
long
last
as
5 years.
I was being a student, I wouldn't say it's, like pretty laid back and kind of thing, because I was working super hard, I would say, because For the first 2 years, like it's even been more tough because we had Siley on our first year here. Because as soon as we came here in 2019, I came on myself, and after 6 weeks of being here, I went back home because I felt like so lonely. And December was like almost dead month here. Nobody was at campus. So I went home for a short vacation. And then on January, I came back. And then my husband joined me on in February. And then in the middle of the pandemic, we realized we are expecting Siley. So, yeah, so much going on. And at that time, I was struggling with my proposal, and got to know that we are expecting Siley. And then we had to do like visa renewals, house hunting, and all these things, and getting used to a world with the pandemic and getting used to a new country. So many things to absorb. So I remember like at some points I didn't want to think about, like anything beyond 1 week. So I would always plan things for a week. Okay, within this week, I'm gonna do this bit of my thesis. I'm gonna apply for my visa. I'm gonna do this bit. I'm gonna have this medical appointment. So life was like that, like no much expectation. So we were sort of living on weekly basis. We will always think about what we are going for the next week. So somehow we survived. So life was so busy, and then eventually I started working part-time and then working pretty much full-time. So full-time mom, full-time student, and a full-time worker. So different roles. And I would give credit to my husband as well because he was very helpful and doing a lot of housework, I would say, because I wanted to focus on Siley first. And then my studies and my job, and whatever the time that left wasn't enough, to do all the housework. So he was basically taking care of everything in the house so I could focus on the rest of the things. So there was so much going on for the last 5 years, I would say, then having the residency and going for our first home and so many things. But I'm so glad, like, by the time I end my PhD, I think we had a pretty settled family in New Zealand. Like, Siley was 4 years old, and then we became residents here, and then we got our first home. So, yeah. So, I'm expecting that it's time for me to relax now a little bit, at least to have a breath.
Yeah, I think that is what you need, isn't it? And I
Yeah.
know that we can hear Siley in the background here, which is always good to have people who we are talking about in the background.
Of course.
Yeah, and of course, I think you deserve a little break because you've worked too hard.
That's gonna be tricky. You go now that I have used to, work so hard, I got so much energy in me. So I'm always looking ways to like, I think now I need to learn how to relax,
Yeah, now because you've got all that energy built up in you now. Now it's just about settling it in different spaces. Yeah. All right.
But
So
of course, I mean, even though we were like super busy for the last 5 years in our lives, we never forget to take those micro breaks, to go for a walk and roam around beautiful South Island and do those kind of things, which I think like every time we sort of spend our energy and time to, explore such things on the nature, go for a walk and, enjoy the beauty of South Island. I think it sort of like re-energize us. And I think that's the secret that sort of like made us running, for the last 5 years. Yeah. I mean, after being here for 5 years, I would say like, I don't want to. I mean, of course, I love Sri Lanka, but if I am to live anywhere in this world, like I would always choose Christchurch because I'm in love with Christchurch, especially South Island. So,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah. So, if someone were to ask you to describe someone in Sri Lanka who's never seen New Zealand, has asked you to describe what New Zealand is like, what would you say?
to describe it verbally, but I would draw a picture, a mountain, with a snow peak, clouds, grass, and a sheep. So that's, I mean, yeah, here it is. It's very peaceful. Can be a little laid back comparing to some other parts of the world. But yeah, I would say like simply it's peaceful. If you want to enjoy your life, like yeah, I would say
Yeah.
this is the place.
Yeah, and if you want to slow down in life, this is
Slow
the
down
place.
in slow down
Yeah.
in your life. Yeah,
Yeah.
and be close to the nature.
Nice. So I think my next question was around when you were talking about coming in and settling in New Zealand the first 5 years. Let's go with 5 years. How easy was it for you to build some social connections here? Or how hard was it?
Next. Kiwis are great. They're very friendly. I mean, kind, but mostly they are sort of reserved. So it's very sort of hard to break that circle and get into their friend circle, I would say. I think that's Kiwi nature. So honestly, I only have very limited number of Kiwis who are friend of mine, but we do have a big circle of Sri Lankan and other nationality community around us, whom sort of like we do keep connections, like we invited them to come to our house and we are invited by them, sort of a thing. So it took some time to build up that network, but of course, as the time passed by, you are surrounded by, you know, good people. Importantly, I think like what you give is what you get. So as long as you're honest and as long as you are compassionate, you know, kind and generous towards other people, they would always do the same. So honestly, I'm not trying to segregate anyone based on their any other backgrounds. Just be open-minded and then you'll find, you know, like truly beautiful people around you.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned about connecting with your community, and you also do a podcast.
Yes,
Yeah, so
I
tell me a little bit about why you started it and how it got started, because it is focused on the Sri Lankan community, isn't it?
Yes, it is for Sri Lankan community. So if I talk about my podcasting history with Plains FM, I think it goes back to 2020. So the way I hook up with Plains FMers, at that time they had a show called Studomania. So the person who was running the show, Sally Carlton, was visiting University of Canterbury and she was sort of seeking for volunteers to sort of participate for that Studomania program. And somehow I ended up having a chat with Sally. And I remember we recorded our first show for Studomania about Sri Lankan New Year on 2020 April. And I think we were on level 2 lockdown at that time. I remember like I recorded with my husband, and when we were talking about traditional Sri Lankan sweetmeats and things, like we were almost like, oh my gosh, we are missing those things so much. So we did the recording using our smartphones, and that was our first recording. And ever since, even when I was expecting Siley, I did couple of shows with them and did few video productions, and I've been in touch with them, did couple of like voluntary podcasts representing the community. And somehow in 2023 we could get a grant from Ministry of Ethnic Communities to run this show for Sri Lankan community. And ever since, for the last 2 years, we've been running this show, and last month was our second year anniversary. I think we are doing a great job, and we started our social media presence since last year. So yeah, I enjoy doing my monthly podcast. So we invite people from different background. It's not just from the Sri Lankan community. We are open up for anyone. When we talk about different topics with more focus on, art and culture and well-being and things like that. Yeah.
And what is the show called?
I Born Canterbury.
On Plains FM.
On Plans FM, our show is a monthly show, so every fourth Friday at 8 p.m. we are on air.
Nice, nice.
And if anyone wants to listen to our podcast, you can always find us on Spotify, I Born Canterbury, or find us on Plans FM website.
Nice. So with the show, do you feel that the show you have grown your social network because you do the show?
Definitely, definitely. And I think the most important thing that we could do as Ibo and Canterbury crew, so I host the show with one of my other friend, Ranbali. The best thing we could do is to sort of like connect different community groups within the Sri Lankan community as well, because Kantan Lanka is the sort of like the core body of like Sri Lankan community network. And then we have Sri Lankan temple, and then we have Sri Lankan Tamil community and Sri Lankan cricket teams here, like the local cricket players. So through our show, we sort of like could connect each, groups, and that's the best thing that we could do. So it grew our network, and it also likes help them to grow also their networks. Yeah. And it was interesting to see like how much people wanted to contribute to the community, because as we run the show, like people from the community would reach out to us and ask whether they are willing to talk about these things, can we get a slot from you? I think that's the community engagement that we are expecting. So I'm so glad we have become a sort of a hub for Sri Lankan community to, interact with, and we could create that platform for the people in our community to sort of like showcase their skills, or we reach out to them, or like, get them onto stage. Yeah.
So I know we talked, you're connecting the Sri Lankan community and giving that platform. How much does that matter to you as well in terms of your cultural identity as a Sri Lankan to kind of hold on to that Sri Lankan identity?
Yeah, I think it matters a lot to me, because as a Sri Lankan, I could really sort of like expose my Sri Lankan identity with my community work. And I believe it's my responsibility, as a person with, some sort of like education background, and as a former teacher, I would say. So I always has this, responsibility towards our future generation. So I also have a daughter growing up in New Zealand, but she has her Sri Lankan roots. So I don't want her to lose that, her connection with her Sri Lankan roots. So what I believe is like through all these community works, we are helping our future generation to be sort of connect with their roots. Like individually, there's so much less that we can do. But as a community, there's so much we can do for our future generation. I mean, not just for Sri Lankan generation, but also to the, overall community, share the best practices from our culture to their cultures and learn from them and sort of like expand and enhance our culture too. So I think that's the best thing, because Sri Lanka is very multicultural. We have Sri Lankans, we have Muslims, Buddhists, Christians and Catholics. So in Christchurch, we are not recognized as Sri Lankan Tamil, Sri Lankan Muslim, Sri Lankan Catholic, Sri Lankan Buddhist. We all are Sri Lankans. So we bring that, nationalism forward, and we work together. We celebrate, we go to the temple, we celebrate Vesak, and even if you are not celebrating Sri Lankan New Year, in back home, you would join Sri Lankan New Year celebrations here because, you know, that's the spirit you have. We don't care about, you know, our, you know, ethnic backgrounds. We just care about our Sri Lankan identity. So I think that's what matters, you know, at the end of the day, creating that connection back to our roots in Sri Lanka. Yeah. So I think I really, through those podcasts, that's what I'm really enjoying, like, you know, going back to our roots and bringing out our culture and, you know, spreading all the good things for future generation who's growing here.
Yeah. So on your podcast, I know you're trying to build a community of Sri Lankans. Have there been any key themes or challenges that have been pointed out by the wider Sri Lankan community on the podcast that come to your mind when you start to look at as a Sri Lankan immigrant or just as an immigrant, what have been the most significant challenges that people have encountered, you know, both men and women, if we were to look at.
You mean like when running the podcast or like
No,
general
just
issues?
in general, have they highlighted some challenges around any aspects of, you know, just settling in into New Zealand and life in New Zealand?
I think generally, like when you are an immigrant, you don't know anything about here, anything about the systems here, you know, facilities available and things like that. So a common issue would be like mostly a common issue would be like, you know, not knowing things. So it's always nice to have that mentorship from someone who got more experience. I think through our podcast, through IBU and Canterbury, like while promoting our culture, we are also trying to give that mentorship, you know. So during our last month episode, we had a conversation with a Buddhist monk about mental well-being and sort of mindfulness, because mental challenges are one of the, you know, kind of like a number one problem among a lot of immigrants. When you move from there to here, it's a big change in your life. You're losing your, you know, stability in your employment, you're losing your financial stability, and you'll be struggling with your kids, you'll be struggling in your workplace, everything is pretty new. So yeah, we are trying to give that mentorship through our program, like while we are sort of entertaining people at the same time. Yeah, I think having the right mentorship is a big challenge for immigrant community, like where to get support, like whom to ask, what's the right way to do things, what's the law of the country, you know. Yeah, I think those are the areas that needs, you know, a lot of improvements. Of course, the information are there on the websites and things, but people whose first language is not English would be always having problems, even if you have, you know, a good level of language sort of literacy. So having multiple ways to sort of deliver information, having sort of a community leaders who people can reach for those mentorship and kind of things, I think would be great solutions to overcome such challenges.
Do you have something like that? Like apart from the podcast, do you have anything for newcomers, like let's say newcomers from Sri Lanka? Do you have something like a resource for the community?
As I mentioned earlier, so Canton Lankan community is our, I would say that's a Sri Lankan hub, like that's the main body of, you know, Sri Lankan community. So if anyone is coming from Sri Lanka, then their Facebook page is available. Anyone can sort of like message them. And we have had incidents. I'm not part of the committee, but I know like people from the community reach out to me, like if there's a new student coming into Canterbury University, like they would find the group on Facebook, and then they would reach out to them, like, hey, I'm coming to study here. Are you able to find me a room or something, you know? And then like they would send that message to someone who can help them with. And also that hub works as a place if you want to rent out a room in your house, you know. Somebody would say, like, I have a spare room, like, if anyone wants a room, and you know, kind of like things. And sometimes they would ask questions about certain things, and then people would reply to that. I mean, that's the platform that we have, as far as I know. I mean, to help people. And we also have Sri Lankan, you know, Buddhist temple. And the temple also does a lot of work around helping people to sort of settle into the country, you know, in need. And also we have Sri Lankan Tamil community, and they also have a network where they would sort of help people from the Tamil cultural background to, you know, settle in if they need mentorship, kind of a thing. Yeah.
So those are mostly informal networks, right?
Mostly informal. Yeah.
And that's, I think, one of the things that kind of keeps coming back is that the informal nature
Yeah,
of
that's what I
support.
said. Like, we need to have a, like, you know, an appointed community leader to sort of take the leadership on such things to make sure the right and updated information is being passed to people. Yeah.
And I guess that from that and your idea and the thing that you're trying to work with in your podcast around mentorship, I think is kind of like a very good solution to any newcomers who come in and are trying to settle in. And I even understand what it's like to come in here and live in New Zealand. I think one of the other things that I do want to talk about is in terms of when people do come here, and you're trying to keep up the Sri Lankan way of life, if we were to say, with your cultural discussion and the idea of the Sri Lankan community connecting across each other, is there any element of loss that you experience because you've come to New Zealand? And this is very specifically from your, from your Sri Lankan identity coming here into New Zealand.
I think, like, if there's anything that I lost, I would say that's the proximity to my family. Of course, that happened because New Zealand is like far away from Sri Lanka, and there's a like 6.5, 7 hours different depending on the time of the year. So I obviously lost that proximity, and I think a lot of Sri Lankan does that. Yeah. And also, like, you know, if you're having family members living across the globe, it's get even, you know, worse. So I think that happened to me. So I think, yeah, mainly I lost that proximity to my family. And every now and then I miss my Sri Lankan food too. I think for the first 2 years, I think I badly missed Sri Lankan food. But now, thankfully, the Sri Lankan community is growing, and we have a good Sri Lankan grocery store, and like couple of, you know, a good Sri Lankan restaurant, and couple of like home-based vendors who would always do, you know, that kind of like delicious traditional Sri Lankan meals. Because I remember when I was expecting Sally, there was only one Sri Lankan restaurant, and I was sort of craving for Sri Lankan food, and they were only open for like 2 or 3 hours a day, and only for 3 or 2 days per week. But now, there's no such barrier, so there are a lot of options. Yeah, lucky
Nice.
in that way. But of course, miss that, you know, authentic Sri Lankan street food flavors sometimes, and of course, missing the friends and family. I miss that proximity, honestly.
And how do you think that impacts your future generations? That lack of proximity to close family?
There'll be a bigger impact at some points. I'm thinking the reason the society here suffers from, you know, high levels of youth unrest and things is because they have lost their proximity with their families. You know, everybody is trying to run sort of independent lives. The children are separated from their parents, you know, like they'll be sleeping alone in a separate room as a newborn. And then once they are like 16, 17, they'll be moving out of the house, and they sort of like, you know, I think that'll be a problem at some points, because I appreciate someone being independent, but at the same time, you need to have that close proximity. As a person coming from a South Asian background, for over centuries, that's the system that we've been used to. Like, even though we are a country from Global South, the youth unrest, people's, the level of mental well-being and mental health, it's not that bad, like we suffered from a 30-year from a war for 3 decades. People have had a lot of issues throughout their lives, but I would say generally people are happy. They don't have half of the things that people have here, but they are happy. They always have a smile on their faces. I think
And
sometimes I miss it here,
the smile on the face. I think there's a difference in culture that
Yeah,
is
it's a
very
cultural
wide.
difference. I get it, but I think at some point it's nice to have that, proximity to your family. Because when I was growing up, I got to spend a lot of time with my grandparents. So they have a different perspective about me. Like my mom was always focused on my, education, my health, my nutrition, and such things. Whereas my grandparents would be like more flexible around me. They would let me do new things, And I sort of, as a child, when I was growing up, like I love having my cousins in my house. I love having people visiting my house. But here, most of us doesn't have, cousins or like close relations. And even if we are surrounded by a bunch of friends, at some points, our lives are so busy. People are sometimes working during the weekend. Like, even within the same family, I know a lot of families, just because they can't make arrangements for child care, mom worked during the daytime and dad worked during the nighttime, and they can't give up working because they have other commitments financially. I think it is important to have that, proximity. If mom and dad is like, busy, and it's good for their mental health as well to have some time for themselves, to have, grandparents close by, or have another, their uncles and aunties close by, so that, kind of have sort of like family set up. So
You
we have a
can't
really
explain it to
nice.
anybody, isn't it? It's a feeling of, I don't know, there is that security in those relationships, even though we might disagree with our relatives, right? We have heaps of fights with our relatives. It's not easy living with heaps of relatives. But it brings, I feel, and that's just what I'm trying to say, is that there is a feeling of security, I feel, that comes with those extended relationships.
You have a lot of friends, but sometimes, people have, different backgrounds and things. And when you have a, bond over blood, it's something different, I would say. It's always different. Like, even if you had like 1,000 arguments, like 1,000 quarrels, and there's a certain way. So
Yeah, I think that is so important, the bond
yeah,
of
the time
blood.
that you spend with your grandparents would be always different to the time that you spend at the kinder care. So
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
yeah, so it's really important to have that proximity at some points. I think that's something that I'm worrying, to be honest, especially as a parent. My
And it's
child,
not cheap to fly back, is it? Often.
yes, yeah, of course, from New Zealand. I wish if she could have spent more time with her grandparents and cousins, and yeah.
I think that's a challenge for a lot of migrant parents who have extended families back in their home countries about
Yeah.
those thinking.
Yeah.
So what
Thanks to
can
technology, it's not too bad, but
Yeah. It's a different thing being face to
yeah.
face. Yeah. So with all of this, I think, we've all obviously said, there's some amazing things about what New Zealand has for us in terms of how we can have a very peaceful life here and a slow down version of lives compared to what we had back home versus, the loss of proximity to family. Do you feel like you have a sense of belonging in New Zealand? Or, what does that feeling of belonging even feel like?
A tough question, Hafsa. Yeah, I don't know. It feels in a different way at different times to me. Now that we are pretty settled here, at some point, I mean, in different perspective, like we have a house here, we are permanent residents, and our child was born here. You feel like you belong to here. But at some points, you might also feel that disconnection, and you'll always have that feeling of like you are an immigrant kind of a thing. But yeah,
So there's
I
a
mean,
dichotomy there, isn't it? There's a dichotomy of belonging in there when you
of
said.
course, yeah. It's not there always. It comes and goes, I would say. It depends on the situation, but I love here. I love New Zealand, especially Christchurch, South Island. Very, very peaceful. What matters to me is like if I want to go for skiing, it's just 1 hour drive from my house. And same if I want to go to the beach. So I think that's what I wanted in my life. So it depends. It really depends on what you want in your life. Some people find it boring, a lot laid back. But I think at this point of my life, I like this balance of my life and have the opportunity to slow down a little bit and enjoy the little moments in my life. Yeah, and really, enjoying it and
Nice.
enjoy what I have achieved so far. Because what happens is like a lot of people, like they always go after achievements, but they really don't take a moment to enjoy what they have done so far. So never enough.
And yeah, I think that's a constant battle for human species, isn't it? That we
Yeah, that's
never
human
got enough.
nature.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's human
that's
nature.
human nature.
So is New Zealand home then?
I would say yes. Yeah,
In terms of the place for belonging then for you?
I of course I miss the close proximity to my family, but now this has become our home.
So my last question before we finish our lovely talk is if you were to give advice to a new immigrant who's coming to New Zealand, based on all your experience here in the past 5 years, what would be some of the things that you would tell them to be or do? How should they come in and get settled in into New Zealand?
My advice would be to be patient and be open because nothing is going to happen overnight. Good things takes time. So you need to be patient and open. Open in the sense like you need to get involved with the local events, talk to people. Unless you talk to people and try to get to know them, you won't be able to get to know them. If someone is unkind to you, just be kind to them and show who you are, show your culture to them, and then they'll start appreciating it. You might meet people with, prejudgments about certain cultural backgrounds, but just let them know. Be patient, be open, and let them know true your true self. I think that's best the way to go. And if you have ever have a, like a bad experience with someone, don't judge the entire community based on that. And mostly it's just the individual, people, their mindsets. So yeah. And take your time. I know it's a big shift for everyone. So be patient. You're not gonna achieve things overnight. Things takes time. So take one step at a time, as I have told earlier. Just plan for the week in your first year or like first 2 years, and you'll eventually achieve things.
Nice. That is such good advice. Take time and be patient. Thank you very much, Himasha, for your time today and the insights you've given and the journey that you've shared with me.
Thank you, Hafsa, for inviting me. It's always been a pleasure to get to know you.
Thanks for joining us on In Transit. If today's story moved you, taught you something new, or simply made you feel seen, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone else. Also, don't forget to tune in to Plains Media for the next episode. Until next time, remember, your story matters.